Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save. All in one global marketplace.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell, in the IDM Content Kitchen today. So it's really fun, exciting to always be in person with the guests. So Gnocchi, thank you so much for joining me. You got a crazy little trip, you know, after reading your background. Bartender to almost basically engineer designing your own product, which is crazy.
It is kind of crazy.
So we've got to get into that. So let's do the 30,000 foot view of kind of your background, history, how you fell into food.
Yeah.
More so beverage than food. Mm-hmm. But let's go through that and then we'll just start prodding and poking along the way.
Yeah. So fell into food story is basically I went to school, I went to college, as you did in the 1990s. 1995, I graduated high school, went to college because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I wanted to be a musician. I'm a songwriter, guitarist.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so went to college to basically buy myself some time and to make my mom happy. And it was a great experience. I know to these days, with the price of college being so high, it's kind of like really talked down on going to school. But back then, I think it was great, and I still think it's great. So I got an English literature degree. Didn't really know what I was going to do. Thought might go into law, but ultimately I wanted to do music. So graduated college, my friend's like, you know, you should try bartending. I'm like, okay, never thought of that. He's like, well, it's a good gig. You make cash. It's a good gig to have. So I'm like, all right, how do you do that? So he's like, well, there's a bartending school. And today, like, that's kind of a laughable concept, bartending school.
Right.
Yeah, because there was, like, an actual bartending school in a store, like, a retail storefront. And I think it's either Hoffman Estates or Schaumburg.
Okay.
And Illinois.
Yeah, I was going to say, for those that don't
Schaumburg,
know, we're both here local in the Chicago market. You're a little bit further north, I'm a little bit west, but
correct.
Here in the Chicago market.
So that took, like, all but 2 weeks. So I graduated, got my diploma, and went to bartending school. And I don't know what my mom thought of that, but she probably was happy because I was getting a job. So then just tried to get a bartending gig and couldn't get one because they sell you that, like, they pitch you the idea that once you get your bartender's license, you'll be able to get a job, but it's just not that easy. So I started off bar backing, and like I kept a little notebook of where all my job my search. Like the 17th place.
Wow.
I got a bar backing opportunity. And then just decided to absorb as much as possible of the craft and trade of bartending, you know, cocktails. I like to get deep into subjects.
Okay.
And so just absorbed all I could. Within like 3 months, I was the lunchtime bartender. And within a year, I had a regular shift. Because there's a lot of, like, attrition in these jobs.
I'm sure. It's probably very similar to waitressing, you know, with a little more skill involved.
Right. I found that bartending jobs are a bit harder to get because there are less bartenders in a restaurant than there are servers. So if you can't get a bartending job, just try serving and, you know, you just wait it out. Something will eventually open up.
Right.
So I'm like, well, okay, bartending is a great job to have. I can still play music, subsidize that dream, and I can still, you know, I didn't have to bring my work home with me. So that was a good gig. And so that's kind of how I fell into it.
But you did it for 15 years.
A little bit longer. And it's a funny story. I had to go back to it during the pandemic. Yes. So, the music thing, I gave myself till I was 30, but then I added on like two more years. But all throughout that time, you know, I would feel the pain of having, like, the number one thing, pain on the job that I could control was cleaning my bar tools after making drinks.
Mm.
So, like, you make a cocktail, you have two tins, and you have to clean them before you make the next cocktail.
Right, right.
There's no quick and easy way to do that. And it really blew my mind because, like, in a bar, everything is made for speed. You have, like, speed pourers. You have glass washers. Everything's made for speed except for that one thing. And bartenders do this, like, every time they make a shake and drink. This could be, like, 100, 200 times a night.
Yeah, and I mean the amount of sugar and just, it's got to be sticky as all hell.
Yeah, and, you know, as cocktails became more and more complicated and complex, as has food throughout the years, it's even more important to make sure you start with a clean canvas. So I'm like, well, as my musical dream was kind of coming to an end, I'm like, it's getting tiring to like get home at 5:30 after band practice, after working. So I'm like, why don't I just start this idea? What's the worst that could happen? And the whole time I was developing this idea for Auto Rinse, an automatic bar tool rinsing station, I just couldn't believe that no one had ever done this before. So the whole time I was trying to prove myself wrong and find a reason to quit.
Mm.
Because when you're pursuing a patent or a business or it's like you're trying to do something unique and novel, if someone's already done it before you, then maybe you should do something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So throughout that whole time, I just, every step of the way, tried to figure out a way not to do it. Because getting a patent is expensive. Product development is expensive. Inventory is expensive. Everything's so expensive. So, but to my shock, no one had ever done this before. And I walked the entire NRA show. In like 2016 maybe.
Okay.
Nothing.
Really? Even at the bar section that they have every known gadget gizmo?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing.
Huh.
And I think the reason why is because there's a gap between people who bartend don't go home and think about how can I make a piece of equipment to help me work better.
That's true.
And then designers and bar equipment manufacturers, they're so far removed from the front line or the shop floor that they don't really, maybe they've already thought everything's been invented that needs to be invented. But having that perspective of being on the front line every night kind of proved to me that this is an actual idea that's worth pursuing. Also, another signal I got was like at Starbucks, the baristas, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but after they make a latte, they rinse out
And the little pushy rinsey thing.
Right. So what they do at some Starbucks, I hope I don't get any baristas in trouble, but they like rig those things so they don't stop spraying water so that you can just put the tint or the frothing pitcher on it and it keeps spraying water.
Hmm.
It's like an automatic rinser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I that was another signal to me like this could be used not only in bars and cocktail, but also in the coffee and now bubble tea worlds. We're selling to those markets
really?
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, the coffee makes a lot of sense just having been in the university setting and have to like cover shifts at the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a pain in the ass to rinse out the milk frothing pitchers. We'd always have like seven of them because it was just too much to try and keep,
right?
You know, one and keep it clean. And then also obviously all the milks that you have to worry about mm-hmm. on top of that. But it was the number one pain point because some of these places were not really set up and really all they had was the hand wash sink and you're not supposed to use the hand wash sink to rinse out, you know,
yes.
from a food safety
Thank
standpoint.
You so much.
But we didn't have a choice, really.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when the health department came, they're like, oh, you know, right. we just use the sani bucket. And I mean, luckily, like the one that I'm thinking of, the like three compartment sink was like right behind the wall. So we would be like, oh, we just swap out the water and we just use
yeah.
that. They never busted us or did anything. But
right.
I knew I was like, this isn't sustainable, but that's what we had to do.
And like what I would see just in just working many bars. Here's what a lot of people don't know, which if they knew, they'd feel a lot differently about their cocktails, right? So a lot of times a bartender will take their Mixingtons and they'll just throw them in a hand sink or a dump sink just because they have no other, they are under so much pressure to work quickly. So they just put it off till later, right?
Yeah.
Well, technically, that those tins have now been contaminated or could be contaminated.
Right, right.
And they shouldn't be in a hand sink, as you just said. Health departments don't like that. It's against code. Same with dump sinks. You know the you know what a Hawthorne strainer is for
Yeah. The it's a little fridley one, and you dump you with, put it on top, and then
yeah,
it, and
with
it,
the springs.
Yeah. I never knew what the thing was for. Yeah. I know I was like helps hold the drink in, but
yeah,
that's about
so
it.
It's so it's to strain the ice out. So like a lot of those things, they end up in dump sinks, and then the bartender just takes them out and uses them again.
Oh God.
And then there's this whole myth, alcohol kills germs. It, like 90% isopropyl alcohol may kill germs, but margarita is not going to kill
right.
E. coli.
Yeah.
Okay? So, but these are things that you wouldn't know unless you actually bartended. So, I, you know, just seeing that and thinking, well, we could, if there was a dedicated spot to rinse your mixing tins, and it had to be inside and out too, because like, a lot of tins get sticky on the outside too, just like milk frothing pitchers. They get sticky on the outside. So I knew that if I wanted to make something that would be the solution, it had to be the best. So it had to be a complete solution, not just, you know, another like a glass rinser, let's say, that was just automatic, right? That could rinse only one item, but the inside of it. I wanted to make it so that a bartender, after making a cocktail, could take everything they used to make that cocktail, put it in the machine, push a button and have it rinse it automatically. And then on top of that, no electricity, only water pressure. Cause that's way above my knowledge. Like I don't know how to use a microchips and PCB boards and all this stuff. People assume you know, whether fairly or not, cause like I'm Asian. They think, oh, you're an engineer, right? Couldn't be further from the truth. I was not good at math. Like a Japanese guy that's not good at math. That was me though. I mean, I'm okay, but like...
But what do you think... Okay, you want to improve the system.
Yeah.
But like, what deep inside you do you think is that spark that was like, I want to make this more efficient? Was it your upbringing? Like, what is it? Because some people, like you said, there's a lot of people that are in the space, bartender, chef, whatever the position is, and they do a job, and they monotonously just do it.
Yeah.
I know I've been in many kitchens, and I'm like, why? We should do this more efficient.
Yeah.
Now, have I ever gone to the lengths of being like, let me completely make an entire piece of equipment that's going to make our lives more efficient? No. To that point, I'm like, that sounds like a hell of a lot of work, and I don't want to go through it. So we would tweak this or do that and improve workflows. But what do you think it is that inside of you that was like, you know what, this... I need to actually make a product.
Because, well, firstly, it's pain, like working and just knowing that it could be better every night. Pain, because I'd always be the service bartender because I like to be the I like to make drinks. I like to be busy, and a lot of people don't like the service bar because it's the hardest job practically in the restaurant, except for perhaps the dishwasher or if you're like on a broiler and you're just getting smoked. I don't know too much about kitchens. But like in the restaurants I've worked at, the broiler guy would always get killed.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't. So like I would always be the service bartender, and it was just like this nagging, a combination of this nagging pain on the job every night and also seeing an opportunity. And I always like to optimize stuff. Like I always like to work on my own stuff. You know, like I play tennis, I like to string my own rackets. Play guitar, I like to work on my own instruments, tune them up and, you know, set them up to the way I like them. It's just like a little bit of obsessiveness, I think, maybe. Hmm. And then, you know, there are like you said, there are systems that you can create without going to the trouble of getting a patent, going to a manufacturer and getting something made, right? For instance, like workflows, mise en place, put this here,
right.
Put this here.
Right.
So that it works for, you know, it's just better workflow. Some things you can do like that that are just easy, that don't have all that friction of like starting a business or creating a piece of equipment. But this just, there was no other way to do it. Because like the only other automatic way is a glass washer. And if you use a glass washer, you have to wait 90 seconds for that thing to cycle. And you're wasting throughput for glassware, which is the most important thing when you're working a busy shift. if you run out of glassware, that's like Amazon running out of boxes.
Yeah.
You have stuff to get out, but you can't, you don't have a vehicle to deliver that product.
Right.
So yeah, I think a little bit of obsessiveness, a little bit of pain, a little bit of creativity. I've always been creative, you know?
It sounds like, right, between music, you picked English, right? Those are very creative outlets.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of which, English definitely not any good at, and music. I played a little bit of sax back in the day, but it didn't have the passion like you did. But I think that's that artist type. You, like you said, you like to work with your hands, right? You're stringing your own rackets, you're doing your guitar. You just wanted to work with your hands. Bartending, you're working with your hands a lot, right?
Definitely.
In the movements and what you do. What's it like putting a prototype together of a product? Is it drawings? This is what's really always asked me about people who create equipment, especially from the ground up.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Are they just drawing on a piece of paper? Are they taking a bunch of like random plastic that they have? Like, how do you even start to begin of actually designing the piece of equipment that you're like, okay, it's in my head. I need to physically get something out.
Mm-hmm.
What's the starting process?
Well, I always tell people, where do you start? You start at the beginning. Your beginning is different than at anyone else's beginning. You just have to start somewhere, right? So to me, it's just, again, this whole process of trying to prove myself wrong. Because if you can pass your own tests of your own, can we swear here?
Oh, yeah.
Like your bullshit tests, then no one else can come back at you later and try to poke holes in your argument if you've already poked your own holes in your argument. So personally, where I started was a sketch. And my sketch was just a single vessel, like glass being rinsed on a flat surface. And then it evolved because I said to myself, well, they already have beer glass rinsers on the market and they're repurposing them for rinsing much more so now. And I believe we have something to do with that because we've kind of awoken the industry to this idea that this is a thing. That's why when we first started our campaign, we said rinsing is a thing because it's not something a lot of people think about, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it was, okay, firstly, I met with my friend who's an engineer. I'm like, hey, is this a feasible idea? He's like, yeah, with all the valves and all the technology that exists, it's feasible. You just have to figure out how to do it.
Hmm.
So then it's a matter of trial and error. What a lot of people don't understand is like we stand on the shoulders of a lot of giants of like technology. You know, a lot of the hard stuff has been figured out for us.
That's true, yeah.
Like plumbing, for instance. Plumbing fixtures have been perfected. And basically, you have to take what's out there and like Lego pieces and try to put it together. For me, it was, I knew that I needed a housing for my rinsing station, so I made it out of plywood. And so how do you waterproof plywood? You got to use epoxy. And none of this stuff I knew back then. I'm speaking about it now because I went through the experience.
Yeah.
But like there's a store called West Marine. It's for boating. You know, they have epoxies and fiberglass and like boat repair stuff. And I'm just spending all this time there. The guy's like, what are you even doing? Like, what are you making? I'm like, well, I'm trying to waterproof this wooden housing. Right. And so like, you just kind of go in with a very open, you know, an open mind, very like curious. Sometimes your curiosity overrides any kind of embarrassment or ignorance you might have, right? So lots of hours spent at Home Depot. I remember Mike Smith talking about that.
Yeah.
It's Home Depot. Like these people would literally like walk the other way. They see me come in again, walk the other way.
I can attest because I spent a large chunk of time working at that exact store for, I don't know, how long is it there? 6-7 years.
Yeah.
And the same thing, you'd see some of the contractors or certain people come in, you're like, oh no, he's going to have 800 questions.
Right.
And you would see everyone just scattered.
Because I'm not a plumber. I'm not a contractor.
Yeah.
I have no engineering or industrial design experience. But one thing I do, I think I can think things through very systematically, right? So it's all about the user experience, UX. didn't know that term then. But for instance, the rinsing station, it's designed so that you can let go of your dirty tins, clear the rinse platform, and reload the rinse platform.
Mm.
That detail is what I wanted it to be. Because if it wasn't quick and fast, I wouldn't be able to sell it. A lot of people recommended we put like doors on it or a curtain. I'm like, no, if it doesn't have that open aperture,
just one more barrier to worry about germs, bacteria, and it's just a pain, right? A little curtain. There's nothing worse like coolers that have the air screens, right. And you got to go through the air screen, and it, you know, you're trying to hold on to stuff, and it smacks stuff out of your hand. I know that in some cases, like, it's necessary, but yeah, they're a giant pain.
Right. So like, it was more about simplicity too, like make it simple. So no electricity, because electricity has a, like, people think like appliances today are just going to break because they're so used to this like planned obsolescence of their technology at home and stuff like that. And then again, that's above my knowledge, way above. All of this is above my, what I know to do, my area of expertise. But you find people along the way to try to help you, you know? So you find first you got to prove that it's going to work in whatever way possible. So the first prototype was literally a paper towel holder with a 2x4 cut and then like zip tied to it, a hose going downward and a hose coming upward. Just to see if I could, this thing would work on water pressure, like at my house. That later evolved into, okay, if you really want to make this efficient, it has to rinse two vessels at the same time, because bartenders always use two sides of a mixing tin, right? Two halves.
Yeah.
So then you go and test that. You don't necessarily have to make the whole apparatus, but you have to test that the four nozzles the water pressure can sustain the needed pressure through the four nozzles. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then you prove that, okay, I proved that. Now I can build an apparatus around it. It's got to be easily cleanable. So the auto rinse, you can actually take all the inner components out and they all fit on a standard glass washing rack.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Because people hate having new things to clean, to look after, right?
Yeah. It's got to go to the three-compartment sink, but then it's going to get damaged because the dishwasher doesn't know what it is or how to take care of it, or it goes to the dish machine, and same thing, it could still get jammed and dinged up, and then you're like, great. I had tons of pieces of equipment that was like, this is hand wash only. You cannot run it through the machine. And sure as shit, the next day you'd come in like, hey, chef, this is broken. And you would look, and you're like, this was ran through the dish machine, wasn't it? And they're like, yeah, how did you know? And I was like, it's warped. I can tell it can't handle that heat and that pressure.
Right.
I was like, it's completely destroyed. And they just like, it didn't even bother them. And I'm like, no, like, this is a piece of equipment we need in the kitchen. Ugh, right, always drove me nuts.
So like one of the key, like the cornerstones of this design is a valve that's made by Chicago Faucet. So it is a slow close self-metering valve. The kind you'd see like in airports where you just push the button and it slowly closes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, amazingly, they make this valve that to the tenth of a second, it's accurate. And it's all analog parts. There's no microchips. There's no electricity. It's just a genius design.
Natural physics.
Yeah, yeah. Water pressure, you break the pressure seal and the water pressure itself closes the seal. Funny, getting them to sell us a single faucet was, you're like, why? This is weird. We don't have a product number for you. And then you have to sell that idea to your vendors at first. It's all about sales, right? So you got to sell people on your idea that it's possible. Then you got to sell your vendors to actually make it for you. Because a lot of vendors are in the mindset of like, what's your minimum order quantity? MOQ.
Mm-hmm.
When someone first asked me that, I didn't know what that meant. What do you mean MOQ? Well, do you want 500, 1,000? Well, how about one? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then they're like, good luck.
Yeah,
get
good
out
luck.
Here.
We'll quote you, and we'll make the price so high that you'll just not deal with us. So we don't have to tell you no. That happened a lot. So, the Chicago Faucet valve, we had to basically say, would you just sell us just a single valve instead of a hot, a cold, and a faucet, right? They ended up doing that. So we built a relationship with them. There's a really great distributor in Chicago called The Faucet Shop. Not related, but that's where we get our faucet handles from. for the longest time, I couldn't get anyone to prototype the design out of steel. Mm. All right. So we went to this trade show called Design to Part. They have it 2 times a year and it's all manufacturers, right? 3D printing, plastics, steel, stamping, all this, whatever. So you go there and everyone tells you they can do it and almost nobody really can do it. They tell you they can do it so they can try to figure it out. And then they figure out, well, it's either too expensive or it's not within our core competency or capabilities. So in the early days, I had a mailbox at the UPS store. And hanging off of their large format printer was a stainless steel manufacturer. So that's how I found my stainless steel guy. I just called the number on that thing. No reference, no nothing. It's just me looking at a piece of paper that's hanging off a printer that I have no business looking at. You know what I mean? And then, so I've developed a relationship should I name people?
That's up to you.
Okay, yeah. So I have a local steel manufacturer who everyone thinks now everything's made in China, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't believe how much stuff is actually still made here in the U.S. because of the cost.
Yeah.
You know? It just doesn't make sense to make things overseas, some things overseas.
Yeah, some things with like super volume, obviously because of the automation that they have and the speed at which they can pump it out. But to your point, if you're not pumping out probably millions of units of something, it probably doesn't make sense. It's probably, not to mention any tariffs that are tacked on top of that, getting in here, logistics, freight. People don't talk about freight and what it costs to just get something to the States. Are you air freighting? Are you boat freighting? Right. They're like, wait, what do you mean? They're like, well, you either got to bring it over on a boat, or you got to ship it through the air. And if you go through the air, double, triple your costs. Then it's got to get through customs at the, you know, wherever it is. If it's flying in, you know, the airport, certain airports you can fly into has to clear customs. That process can take a long time. Whereas if it's done here, I'm assuming it's, all right, we're ready. Where do you want them shipped to?
You know, like communication is hard enough between two people. I can't imagine having to talk to a vendor in China. I don't speak Chinese. I don't have a Chinese agent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So, yeah, like by serendipity, we found a local manufacturer. And that was huge because being able to call them and being able to go there and talk and collaborate is a huge deal. The very first run we did was a contract manufacturer out of Michigan. So we had our first like production run. So we got after our prototypes, which were about like 4, 5, 6, you know, different prototypes, none of which were made like commercially, all of which were made by me. You know what I mean? Just to outline how this thing would get made. We finally arrived at our production model unit. We had a trade show in Wisconsin, like 3 weeks out. So I ordered these units, drove to Michigan, and as soon as I got there, on the shop floor, I could see they were made incorrectly.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a disaster. They were made incorrectly. They didn't have the nozzles pointing downward to rinse the outside of the tins, plus a bunch of other stuff they tried to pass off to me. So I rented a van, drove to, like 5 hours to Michigan to get these units, came back with one. They had to modify in my garage with a drill, which, like, if you ever try to drill stainless steel, it's really hard.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Yeah. So, you know, just, I don't know, cobbling together solutions. We got it together in time for the trade show, did the show, and, you know, that's where it kind of all started.
Like, so what was the time? How many years? Because I'm assuming it probably took years from idea to actual product. How long was that?
Well, I actually, because a lot of the years were spent like sleeping on the idea, not really.
All right, take out the sleeping ideas where you're like, okay, I'm actually where you cut out your own bullshit.
Probably 5 years.
5 years. Wow.
Yeah. Because 5 years is like the beginning of like incorporating the business, doing research and development, doing all kinds of. I'll give you pictures of like my first. Real conception, like day one conception. It's literally like copper tubing, masking tape, and like aerators and stuff like that taped to a table just to get the idea in my head.
Yeah.
And from there, it just grew from that point.
So you did the trade show. So didn't you find a manufacturer that was able to actually produce? Like you retrofitted it, you jimmy-rigged it, and then did you take it back to somewhere or did you say, this is what I need?
Well, that's when I found the local person.
Okay, okay. You know?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So they actually were able to build it properly. And it was their, they never built anything like that before either. So, you know.
And how big is this unit? On the screen, I'll throw up like an actual picture of the unit running and whatnot, but like just give like rough dimensions.
So the auto rinse is it's 15 inches wide, 19 inches tall.
Oh, that's tiny.
Yeah.
That's really small.
And some of the pushback we get is this is huge, but they don't understand.
It's only water pressure. There's no electric needed. So, I mean, bar, coffee shop, whatever it is, they're going to have water. You got to have water to your espresso machine. You got to have water for the bar guns for any. I mean, there's water literally lines running all along up a regular bar.
Yeah.
It's not that, can't be that hard to tap off of a line and just run it into the unit. So, you know, that really should, I wouldn't think that would be as big of an issue.
Yeah. When people see it in person, they realize how small it is. They see pictures of it online. Like in our social media content, sometimes they, you know how, you know I mean?
The angle you shoot it at makes it look bigger than it actually is.
Trolls are everywhere.
Yeah, they are.
So, you know, the overwhelming response is positive, but you always have trolls who object, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's a small footprint. But one of the biggest mistakes we made was, okay, it has a tabletop base, so you can put it on a counter. And so I assumed very arrogantly that the designers will figure it out. They'll figure out how to fit this into their designs, right? Well, huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Huge mistake. Because one of the biggest friction points was where do we put it and how do we put it where we want to put it? So that really led us to create four installation accessories. So we have a cabinet that it can mount on top of. Like a 2x2 like station that also has a speed rail on it for bottles.
Mm.
We have a bracket that you can mount it under a bar. You can either suspend it or you can hang it to the die wall of the bar. And we have a tabletop base for like the coffee and bubble tea worlds. So that was a huge humbling thing. Like, cause I thought, I spent all this time and energy to get this thing right. It works. Now it's up to the world to adopt it.
Yeah.
Big mistake. Huge mistake.
Yeah, you always have to find you have to find those solutions because you're not going to find them until you get to the real world to test it when someone actually goes to put it in. Like you said, you can sit there and think of everything that could go wrong. All right, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But until you actually put it into practical application, you're just like, oh, shit. If we don't do this, like it's going to hinder sales because people are going to give every excuse not to use a product that makes their life easier.
Right.
Than to say, oh, yes, this will help our operation. They're going to be like, no space, can't do it, don't have an actual spot for it. So, sorry, move along.
Right. It's easy for people to say no. So you got to remove all the friction points possible from cleaning the product to maintaining the product, selling the product, owning the product, to placing the product. Even like in manufacturing, you want to eliminate friction points, right? So that you can make it faster. Another friction point is maintenance, right? A lot of people push back and say, well, I don't want this thing to break down and then I have to call service tech. Well, the one thing that really only can fail is the valve, just like any sink, right? So it's field serviceable. We made it so that you can just take a wrench, replace the cartridge, and you're back in business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like all these things that companies try not to do, a lot of equipment companies make it extremely hard to service in the field so that they can take it in.
Because service is a huge, and this is kind of a hidden secret of the industry, is that service is a huge piece of their business model.
Yes.
If it breaks, okay, we'll use this service technician or the parts that you have to replace.
Mm.
It's like a car, right? You buy a car and you're like, okay, everything's hunky-dory. And then a belt goes down and between labor and part, you're like, how is this $4,000 or $3,000?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Or, oh, this blew. And so you need a new something. That's what a lot of companies will do. They'll design it purposefully to be like, all right, well, the parts we can actually, because the margin on those parts can be massive. If they're already manufacturing it or have them available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's just sell the parts as a piece, you know, and they just won't know it when it breaks and they need it. well, they're going to pay to get it fixed.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. What do you, I want to get like your general thoughts about like, just like because you were in the bar space, kind of like the decline of alcohol and the rise of the non-alcoholic beverages. You know, I've got some stats here. You know, as of July 25, only 54% of U.S. adults report consuming alcohol, which is the lowest it's ever been since 96. What are your general thoughts on that space?
Yeah, I can see why, especially with the legalization of marijuana. I just feel like alcohol is... I don't drink. I know a few bartenders who don't drink either. And I never had an alcohol problem. I think my problem was I couldn't, my tolerance was too low. But yeah, it's a trend of now, but I don't know if that will last. I mean, I think that things ebb and flow. And alcohol is such a, cocktail culture is so like interesting and inviting and there's always something going on, and now they're doing NA cocktails.
Yeah.
So I think they're still trying to keep people in the fold, and going out to eat is always, I don't know if people ever stop doing that.
No, I don't think so, because they want that connectivity. They want to connect with other human beings. I talked to somebody recently about this and how that's just a natural part of life. We're social creatures. We want to connect. We want to be around people. And what better way than going out to eat when it's like, okay, I don't have to spend the time cooking and cleaning and you get all that and people are just like, ah, it's just easier to go out and let somebody else handle it.
Right.
And obviously we'll pay the cost of that happening. But I just didn't know because it seems like, yeah, it's dipping down. NAs are going up, but it's like, where's the fine balance? Because people are, to your point, they're always going to drink, I think, to some degree, or people, they like that social atmosphere. And again, alcohol gives you that feeling, you know, liquid courage, you know,
right,
so you hear a lot of people that will do that just to give them that little bit of like, oh, if I have a couple, then I loosen up and, you know, I feel good at the time, but obviously feel like shit the next day.
Right. I just feel like it's also people don't go out as much either. Younger people especially stay in on their screens and on their tablets and on, you know,
that's fair.
They live more like inner lives, I guess. It's a phenomenon for sure.
Yeah, screens. There's more social media than ever.
Yeah.
But yes, they're the least social beings, right? Give me a phone, give me a screen, and you know, I'll connect to the world there. That leads me into, I want to talk about your social media and kind of how you're approaching it as a small company, what you're doing, kind of the power of organic. I love Gary Vee and what he talks about with organic social and the power of it. Just, I've seen your videos, they've been popping up more, just how you're approaching that. You know, I don't know if it's just a team of just you or you have, you know, other people, you know, on the sales side, etc. But what's your approach to the organic social?
Yeah, this is something this is probably the hardest puzzle, the hardest piece of the puzzle. Harder than, you know, creating the product, harder than anything. But I think we're finally starting to, you know, tweak the right knobs and get them in the right spots. So, huge fan of Gary Vee. You know, I've been following him since I started the business, you know. And it's funny you mentioned him because one of the last books I read on this subject was Day Trading Attention.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a very good one.
And what I've learned is there's no prescription. There's no like step one, step two, step three. You kind of have to forge your own path in a lot of cases. For us, it's like we don't have a sexy product. And we know that. One of my business mentors very early on said, your product is not sexy. And I can attest to that, or I support that. It's true. It's not sexy. So how do you make it sexy? You know, you have to, what we're trying to do is get people into the pain of being on the front line, of being the bartender in the well, in the moment. You know, like our other product, the Auto Burn, automatic ice melting unit that you can attach.
I needed one of those back in the day. That was always a pain in the ass too.
So that's another thing. It's like you just got to get people into the psychology of that. And you know, they say a lot of, you know, it's best practice to give value when you do social media. So like instead of us like teaching about bartending or mise en place, our thing is just efficiency. So our job is to educate the operators, the users, about these little things that you see in the field that you would never see unless you're in the field, and how they impact your business and your bottom line. Mm. You know, like something we always talk about is like, do you want your bartender to be a dishwasher or a bartender? Because if they're tied to a sink, rinsing their tools, even for 5-10 seconds, that adds up over a night, right? And if you can get your servers out faster, if you decrease your drink ticket times, your servers get out back to the floor faster and they can have more engagement with their guests.
Right.
And that means more sales. So we have to really take it beyond the bar, because it is beyond the bar, you know, our products. And so we're just trying to tell stories, little snippets of, you know, the impacts our products can have on your business. If you just took a little bit of time to actually see that this is actually happening, you know, you break a glass anywhere near an ice wall, you have to burn the ice.
Yeah.
Right. So the old way is, panic.
Well, maybe tell people what burn the ice is. Those that are watching in the space, they're probably like, what the hell is he talking about? Burning ice? Was that like a flamethrower or what?
So burning ice. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get so caught up in my own like vernacular of the industry, but burning the ice is melting the ice in an ice bin if a glass is broken anywhere remotely close to it. Because there's always a chance that, you know, a piece has fallen into the ice. So you can't risk it. So you have to actually melt or burn the ice. So the old way is you do it, you get pitchers or you scoop the ice out, right? With our product, all you have to do is turn the unit on, get two new containers of fresh or one new container of fresh ice and just keep making drinks. And then later on, you can tend to the ice bin. You know, after all the ice has been melted, after it slows down, you could properly inspect the ice bin, make sure there's no glass. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of like getting, and it's a nice thing that now like short form is popular and like the TikTokification of social media. Mm-hmm. 'Cause back in the day, we would be like, okay, like being an English major, all right, I'm going to make one video, hit all the points, be exhaustive as possible, make the argument, and then no one can argue with me. Well, no one's going to watch all that.
That's true.
Today, you can hit people with 10-second, 30-second clips over and over again and just kind of plant these seeds in their mind about why they should, you know, listen to you and buy your products. And why that, like, and of course, it's not like a pants company on Instagram where they like, the pants look cool, you buy them, and like they're trash when you get them. And then their company is like out of business by the time you want to return the pants.
Yep.
So we're just trying to do it the right way, you know, build awareness, trying to talk to all demographics within the restaurant industry, like bartenders, even chefs, back of house, because back of house talks to front of house, managers, GMs. They're just trying to get all those people in the conversation.
Yeah, because who is it that actually sees it that says, oh, I need that? Do you find it? Is it the actual people, the frontline associates to say, hey, I happen to see this? Or is it inverse that you're seeing more of the decision makers see it and go, I can optimize my operation for my staff?
I think it's really from the bottom up, believe it or not. Mm. You would think it's top down, but at this point, the product is not so widely popular that it's just a thing you do if you're designing a bar. So I think bartenders will bring awareness to their managers, or like managers will see it and they'll be like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. We get a lot of different demographics of people who see it and implement it. Like designers will do that. Bar designers will be, they'll be building a new bar and they'll show their clients and then they'll give the green light. So it's a mixed bag right now.
Yeah. I was going to ask about, we talked bars, we've talked coffee shops, boba. What other applications are you seeing?
Well, we get really odd things. Like last year, we made two custom ice bins with auto burn technology built in for a blood bank. I would have never, I still can't.
What in the hell are they doing with it?
So they use a lot of ice to transport.
Right.
For transporting blood, and then they have to melt that ice. So they need a quick and easy way to melt it. But yeah, I mean, our core is the food service industry.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Have you installed it at any, because the barista thing is what fascinates me more. The bar thing makes total sense. Like, of course, it makes sense. But being a barista, Are you seeing more adoption? Have you seen more people in that space reaching out and saying, hey, this is something we need in our operation?
More and more. Yes. More and more.
Yeah. What's in the future for OmniRinse, AutoBurn? Are you sticking with what I find is like people that create, they just keep creating. They just have this itch. All of a sudden, okay, I kind of got a blueprint. I've kind of figured it out. Let's keep going. Are you in that bucket, or is it, hey, we're good. Let's grow, sustain where we're at. And then we'll, when a problem arises, we'll, and someone says, hey, you ever thought about something like this that can fix this problem? Which bucket are you in?
I'm in bucket A for sure. But bucket, here's what I've learned too. When you come up with a product release, there's a certain financial infrastructure you need to support that release. You know, it's like releasing a film or releasing a movie or a record, let's say. You need a certain amount of money for product development, prototyping, a certain amount of money for promotion, and a certain amount of money for inventory. So while five, six ideas that I want to pursue, but I know that it's not time yet because we got to get these products adopted in the market. And once they become like, it's just what you do. Like if you open a bar, you get an auto rinse in each station and an auto burn on your ice bins. And when that happens, we'll be able to go a little bit further with products.
Yeah. Just get that general capital to be able to then invest into the next problem for the next solution for the next problem. Yeah. The problems are all out there, but I like how you approached it as an actual operator. And that's what I've found, especially in robotics and AI in the kitchen, is you see a lot of these machines that do this, do that, and you look at who created it, and it's an engineer. They've never worked in food.
Yeah.
They've never worked in beverage, yet they create a machine for it. And in theory, everything sounds great. It's hunky-dory. And then somebody in food looks at it and goes, that's not going to work. Like, what about sanitation? Is always a big one. Like, what's going to happen with sanitation? And they're like, well, why do we need to worry about that? Well, because if you don't, then we get shut down and or this piece of equipment no longer runs. And if it's at the core of our operation, we cannot continue operating. So you see that a lot of these engineers that are just creating to create because that's what they do.
Right.
But they don't have the actual application of using a product to say this will work or this won't work. So I think that gives you a leg up in that stance of you lived it. You did it. So you can talk to, here's the pain point. Hey, you know when you're doing this? And they're just like, yeah, I've got a solution for that. It's almost an instant connection to the problem.
Right. And knowing it firsthand so well, validates. Like when I had to go back in 10 bar during the pandemic, I got to use my machine again because I got it installed.
That's
got to
be a cool feeling.
Yeah. But when the world shut down and our products weren't selling, you kind of have doubt. Doubt creeps in, you know? Is this even worth it? People going to buy it? No one's buying anything right now, but you doubt creeps in. But going back and actually using it firsthand underscored, without a doubt in my mind, this is it. We're right about this. This thing works. And it helps a bartender work faster and cleaner. And it saves water, actually, because you're not leaving faucets on to rinse your tins. And it's, you know, obviously, it's against health code anyway. But anyway, that reinforced my belief in the product. Yeah, and I do see this a lot too. You go into bars, or I'm sure you go into kitchens, and you're like, who designed this?
Oh, that is don't get me started on kitchen design.
Yeah.
I've been in so many. There was one place I worked at, and tell me if this makes any sense. Beverage station, soda machines, all sorts, anything of beverage, milk, etc. The floor made of wood. Underneath just that area.
Wood.
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 Oh.
Why on God's green earth would you put that? What happened? Underneath, one of the hoses popped off, leaked, whatever. Next thing you know, we had looked like literally an earthquake, like crater that you see under the sea, you know, when the
swelling?
Tectonic plates.
Yeah,
just bubbled up. They just shut down the whole station. And I was
God.
Whose bright idea was it to put wood under a beverage station? And it's just like, how are these people making probably millions of dollars designing these spaces?
You know how? They sell, okay, here's how they sell a bar from the top up, from the bar top up. When they give you a design, they show you how beautiful the finishes are going to be, how beautiful the lighting is going to be, how beautiful the back bar is going to be. But they don't show you that your engine's not going to work.
Yeah.
The engine is the underbar. And that's really our niche, is like, how to make this thing work better.
Yeah.
Because the finishes and all that stuff are easy. But that's really how people get seduced into this into
buying. Oh yeah, it's a shiny, and shiny this, shiny that. Ooh, look at all the stainless steel. Ooh, look at all the lights.
The lovely pizza oven, the brick, you know. And I can see why. I love gear. I love equipment. I love finishes and stuff too. But like when you go back and you work in it, it's got to work. It has to fire properly, because not only for your staff, but for your bottom line. If your kitchen can't produce efficiently, your bar can't produce efficiently, then you're dead. You know, you're losing a lot of money. You're leaving a lot of money on the table. But I don't think operators really appreciate that, because that can't be measured. You can't really measure what you don't really know.
Yeah.
What slips underneath the cracks. You can't really measure that.
Yeah, it's hard. There's a lot of that in the food and beverage. You think about, not in the sense of labor, of traditional labor, of your staff, but what about all the hours you spend setting this system up or this inventory, something that's monotonous, but you do it week after week and you do it. So those are lost hours, and you don't put it into your own, like, hey, my time is worth something. And I just spent, you know, 4 hours every week doing it. So there's always that. And it's the non-measurables that kill a restaurant, that they don't take into, they just straight up, what's the food cost?
Yeah.
What's my labor? What am I making? Okay, this is what it is. And then they don't know, what's your electricity? What's your water? You know, as soon as you flip those lights on, you're paying money, especially if you're the, you know, tenant of the building and you have to cover all that. And they don't really think of that. You hear it all the time.
Yeah.
When it's going to save you energy, it's going to save you water. But for some reason, food operators just, it kind of goes over their head, and they're just like, I don't really care, because 9 times out of 10, they're not the one writing the check to cover those things. Mm-hmm. And that person then's like, we're not profitable. And like, how are we not profitable? Our food margin, we're running, you know, let's say a good operation, 30% food margins, labor's, I don't know, today's age, it's a little difficult. Let's say we're running 40, super efficient kitchen. So you've got 70% there. We're making 30% profit. And then all of a sudden the actual guy writing the check, the owner, is like, we're losing 5% every month. And they're like, how is this possible? And they don't think about those underlying factors and costs.
Yeah, like two points really sparked in my head. I took a plastics course, just injection mold course, like 1 day seminar. And what really struck me about that was the guy, you know, that's manufacturing. Restaurants kind of is manufacturing. It's on-demand manufacturing. You know what I mean? That's why bartenders are manufacturing on the spot in front of the guests, bespoke orders. It's not like they're getting like a sheet that says, you're going to make these widgets today. You have to do it on the fly. So the more you can automate the tedious processes, the better for them. But that guy that was teaching the course in injection molding is like, you're paying people to take steps, you know, like on the shop floor, right? So why don't you pay them to be more efficient? And that really stuck in my head, you know? And the second thing is, there's a lot to be said about like employee satisfaction. If your kitchen runs smoothly, your employees will be less stressed. They'll be more apt to want to come back tomorrow,
yep,
the next week,
yep,
the next month. And that's an intangible that I think a lot of operators don't really look at. You know, how nice is it for my employees to work here? Like, tech companies do that all the time. They have lounges, cafeterias, blah, blah, blah. But the operators for restaurants don't really take that into consideration. For whatever reason.
Yeah, my best run kitchens were my happy staff.
Yeah.
And it was the small things that made them happy. I saw all these inefficiencies in the kitchen. I'm like, the oven that you got to stick a towel in partially and close it to get it to actually like kick the fan on, and the bottom one's broken. And then this piece of equipment, you got to use a bucket to like load and unload it because whatever reason, they didn't run a water line. They didn't put a drain well. And then you're just like, no, we need to fix these things. And so then you instill like, guys, we need to cut out all the waste. We need to stop using, you know, disposables if you're here, because that's costing us. You add up all the math and you put these things in place. And usually the staff is always pissed at the beginning because you're changing culture, you're changing things. Mm-hmm. But once we started putting in, as I call them, toys, new toys, making the kitchen more efficient, all of a sudden the morale started to come up. They're like, wait, what do you mean you got me a piece of equipment that slices all the onions or the carrots? Well, it makes sense. Why would I have you sit there with a knife for, you know, 6 hours, because I did volume, for 6 hours cutting 200 pounds, or we can just run them through the machine and we can get it done in 30 minutes. And they're right. Like, you don't know how big of a game changer that is to my position. I'm like, I do know, because I was you.
Yeah.
I understand the pain of cutting carrots for 2 hours or whatever it is, or onions for an hour, or potatoes, wedging potatoes. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to wedge potatoes. It's a giant pain in the ass. They make machines that'll do it for you with a little bit of investment up front. And then the staff were super happy. Now we can have holiday parties. And again, we're talking more on the corporate side, not private restaurant stuff. Now they can have these parties and these things where they get to come together as their family and as mm-hmm. a unit. And that's what they talk about at work. Oh, do you remember the Christmas party and we did this and we had the prizes and it was so much fun having someone else cook for us. And now the morale is there and the kitchen runs smooth. And then the money just keeps flowing and then we just keep improving the kitchen. And
you retain people. You retain your best people.
Yeah.
You know? And like you were talking about morale. Morale is a big, it's not on a spreadsheet, but it shows in your sales. It really does.
100%. Yeah. 100%. You can tell when that waiter comes to your table, you know, I'm ready, you know, how are you today? Just the first words out of the mouth. They're having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can tell they love their job. Or the third, I guess, they can kind of put personal life at the door and get in and just do their job really well. But you can truly tell when people are really happy and they enjoy their job there as they're walking by another table. Is there anything else I can get you? Are you sure? You know, and those people, even if they like screw up or they miss something, I usually am not on them because I'm like, they're doing the best they can, right? They're bubbly. They've got energy. You can tell they're trying to be hospitable. But the person that's just like stone cold and you could tell I'm here for a job and that is it. I have a lot less leniency for those people because you're like, you're in the hospitality industry. If you're not here to provide hospitality, go work in retail. You can be a ass as much as you want in retail and not affect my experience, you know, in an aisle of a hardware store or clothing store, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So definitely, I like what you said, morale is not on the P&L.
It's not, but it matters so much. And if just being a front of house employee myself, there's nothing better when you have a manager that's always trying to improve your operation for you.
Yeah.
Because they know that if it's better for you, it's better for them.
Yeah.
And it's better for the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know?
And they always, again, people always wonder why places are successful and why other places are not. And it's those unseen things. Coming up on time.
Okay.
Let's hit up all the socials. Where do people go? I'm gonna throw stuff up on the screen as we're talking and whatnot so they can physically get like, what the hell are you talking about? So head over to YouTube to actually watch the videos. Because if you're listening, you're obviously not gonna see it. So hit them up with all the socials and all that good stuff.
So you can find us at omnirance.com. That's our website. We have a lot of great informational, like short reels on Instagram. Coincidentally, our Instagram is blowing up as of last week. Don't know why, but it's the algorithm is finally being really friendly to us. So you can find us on Instagram at Omnirance, TikTok, LinkedIn. You can find, I'm more doing my profile, and John, my business partner, is doing his profile. Or we need to up our company page on LinkedIn. But all those platforms, all
beautiful.
Those socials.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely link everything down into the show notes so that way people have easy access to find it. And again, it's a pretty cool thing. We got connected through the group Global Nova,
which
I know we don't have time to talk today about, but I know we're trying to work some things through that and really just a really good group of entrepreneurs that are trying to help each other out. So I'm sure there's a lot more to come in that space. So,
yeah, very nice people in that group. Nice people.
Just when you want to help others, you know, that karma comes right back to you. So
agreed.
We'll leave it at that for today. So I really appreciate you making the trip down from Palatine. I know it's not far, but you know, it's still a little bit of a drive.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
And to catch this episode, more, everything, you know, hit up Apple, Spotify, YouTube, you know the usual places, fellintofood.com. And as always, until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.